Access number 11938, reel 30.
Mr. G. Eyston, reel 30. How was the column made up, Mr. Eyston?
Well, the column commander was the 2nd Battalion of the 6th Battalion, Durham Light Infantry, Major Bill Watson, with D Company of the 6th Battalion, with the company commander, Major Cummings, detachment of carriers, mortars, and anti-tank platoons, 452 field battery, and one troop with a 258 anti-tank battery, 74th Field Regiment, a troop of a detachment from the 505 Field Company, platoon from C Company of 2nd Cheshire's, and detachment of B Company 149 Ambulance RAMC.
So it was quite a size.
It was quite a big size, yes. And also a troop of troop carriers from the 524 Field Company, RSC, to carry the men. I can't remember if that's the same one. It sounds familiar, as though it's the same one that was in France with us. Probably is, but you can never tell with these people.
Was there any attempt before the column went to tell you what your own duties were and what you had to do and what you were aiming to do?
No. I knew what my duties were, to keep the vehicles running. The commander didn't know. We stood two under 2 hours' notice for 3 days, and then we moved out. We were in a position we could go either side. We could do an attack on the west or the east. We could go south or we could go north and do. We were in that sort of position. It was a complete outfit. A proper jock column could have gone and done anything. You can tell by the guns that we've got that we're well equipped. On the morning of the 30th, we got Major Watson got orders to leave the box on the Darting Gap, which is on the east side, and make for Alouette El Tamar, which is a high point, sort of well north of Knightsbridge. It's about 12-15 miles north of Knightsbridge, but there was a good ridge, and we were on the ridge with the guns in position and the carriers patrolling on the low ground in front of us, looking to see if they could see anything, and basically, there was nothing. Nothing at all.
You hadn't come across anything up to then?
No.
Was this a reconnaissance column, or had you a specific task?
No. We didn't know what the task was going to be. We were at the divisional commander's discretion, just like the 9th Battalion were when they went out on the east earlier on. They were like a divisional commander's reserve.
So you moved out and still waited orders when you
waiting
got
orders
to
when we got there, yes. Okay. Now, we'd only been there a few hours when we were notified that 151 Brigade wanted, Australia wanted his artillery back, but where it was artillery from, I can't understand us having artillery from 151 Brigade when they were in such serious trouble. I think what was probably meant was that they wanted extra artillery. And we were told that we're going to move down to where the divisional, the recognised divisional mobile reserve was, which was just behind 150 Brigade box. And we set off to go down there, and we got part of the way, and we stopped, and there was a terrific battle going on down below us. We were stopped on a ridge, and we would see a terrific battle going on below us, And this I will always remember is that it's very seldom on a column that we had a colour sergeant or a quartermaster with us. On a column that the captain quartermaster very often brought extra ammunition, petrol, or if we wanted anything. I think it was so that he could say he'd been up the front line. So he very often, if there's anything needed on a column, he would venture out. But on this occasion, we had a colour sergeant, Bill Handel, from Headquarter Company, who just arrived in the box the same week. And I remember sitting on this high point, and we had the vehicles behind us, and we'd been eating a few biscuits, and the lads down behind the ridge have rolled up. And we could see these tanks going like mad for each other, and we sat just as though we were in a grandstand watching it. And some were getting knocked out here, and some were getting knocked out there, some of ours and some of theirs. And we were talking about coal mines. Can you imagine this? He'd been a miner. And I suppose being a colour sergeant in the army was about then going back to the mines, really, because he would be reasonably well paid for as a colour sergeant. And we were talking about mines. And there's this battle, tank battle going on, like, just below us. And the artillery's go over our heads.
And you weren't spotted? You yourselves
were spotted? No, we were just sat there watching all this going on. And you see, it's quite a distance. I suppose we're talking maybe the tanks on our side would probably be half a mile away. And that would probably mean that their tanks would be 3 miles away. But we could see it all. They were there talking about coal mines. It didn't strike you at the time, you know. It's just something that happens later on. Well, we stood among this, watching this for quite a while. And then we got message that the artillery had to go through to the divisional reserve, which was behind the 150 Brigade box. But we had to stay where we were. So Major Watson and quite a few set off and reckoned. The idea was that the artillery went down tonight and we went down in the morning. And the artillery went down, and Bill Watson, he had a good shoot up. Well, he got shot up, rather. He didn't have a shoot up. He got shot up. And they were very lucky, him and Fred Parkinson, they were very lucky to get away. And they came back eventually, and we were recalled back into the box. Why? We don't know. I mean, we had a perfectly good line there that you'd have thought it would have stopped him getting through to Tobruk and things like that. Because those armoured divisions all the way around, you know, it was...
No difficulty getting back.
No difficulty at all. In fact, it was quite an easy thing. Apart from the officers that went off on the recce to get ready for the morning and getting the artillery through, but they didn't get right through to the divisional reserve, but they got into a position where they could have a good shoot, and they did have a good shoot up.
So the artillery had moved?
Oh, yes, they went off with the Colonel Watson, with the Major Watson, and...
How was it that Colonel Watson, do you recall, how he got shot up, yet the artillery managed to get through? Was this on his way back?
He didn't get shot up, actually. The artillery got themselves into a position where they could do a shoot. And the observation officer went off as close as he could get to the tanks and whatever he could find. And he was having a great old time, the artillery. But Bill and the rest of the recce party were going down to select the positions for the morning. They were supposed to go further on. And they got to within, as far as I can make out, to within about 200 yards of where they wanted to be. And then went up over the brow of a little hill, just a very small thing. And there was a tank in the bottom. And he started blazing away at them, and they did a bit of jiggery-pokery, right and left, and the left and the right, and turned round and shot back. And they did eventually get to one of the Armoured Brigade commands, and they reported from there what had happened. And they were told to return back to where they left us. And when he got back, he went in division, saw the division commander, and we were told to report back to the box. We did go out again 2 days later on a similar escapade. Again, it was, as far as I'm concerned, we'll shoot out. We did a little bit of a shoot up, but nothing to mean anything. Nothing that we'd done anything. It didn't.
When you got back to the box after that particular action, you must have had a pretty good idea then that things were getting pretty desperate.
Yes, for all we had the Grant, and she was a good tank in its way. We're still outgunned. I'm not sure we're out-armoured, but we're still outgunned. The Matilda had a terrific armour, but she had a 2-pounder gun, and she did 4 miles an hour.
Well, this information percolating through, you know, coming through, people like yourself haven't been outside and coming back in with stories of what.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think there was any panic at all in there.
You didn't feel that
inside.
You were going to be trapped at this stage, did you?
No, I mean, Tobruk had gone on for months and months and been relieved, you see. I mean, no, I don't think that was a real fear. I mean, we had the feeling that we'd drop back into Tobruk and man the perimeter again. The one thing we didn't know, that there was no intention of holding Tobruk. I mean, that we did not know. We were convinced that even if the Germans got through to the coast, we would still go through and get back to Tobruk and stay there. And it would carry on until we got reinforcements from the Delta.
Did things get increasingly worse from now on in the box?
Well, yes, because now we were getting cut off from our petrol supplies. And we did keep a full reserve of petrol in the box, and I had a reserve of water for vehicles, wet oil, ammunition. Of course, is always a problem because ammunition, you can't carry so much ammunition, and you've got to keep replacing it. So that is always a problem, and of course, fresh water is a problem. I mean, you can drink dirty water, which we were doing. We're using the water being stored for donkeys here in 40-gallon drums, the water for the vehicle radiators. So, yes, things were beginning to get tight. Well, I mean, we hadn't seen bread for quite a considerable time. And I did explain about the bread when we did get it, it was all sand. But, yes, things were getting quite serious now. But we never thought of being taken out of the box or anything like that. I mean, we thought we were in the box to stay and somebody would come along and relieve us eventually. We didn't actually think, that, we knew in fact that Rommel was sort of on his extremes. And I think it is true to say that he was touch and go. He just got shot at 150 Brigade, which gave him a clear run round and opened his supply lines up. Otherwise, he was out. Now, if we'd taken a brigade of tanks out on the west side and really got something about his supply lines, then I think it was an Eighth Army positive Eighth Army situation.
Was this the view of many of you in the box? Did you
feel this? Quite a few. I mean, you know, I've explained the tanks, the carriers. They did a good job, but they were very lightly armoured. Fortunately, they were low. They weren't very high. It was a great saving for them. Well, we didn't really lose a lot of men. In fact, we didn't lose many men at all in the box itself. I think about three, maybe four, in the box itself. We lost a few outside, going out on patrol and things like that, but even then we hadn't lost many. In fact, for that 4 or 5 months, our casualties have been negligible, really. We've probably lost more in a town with motor accidents if we'd been in a town. No, we'd lost very, very few people.
You returned to the box, Mr. Eyston, after being out to the east?
I think we returned on the 29th of May. On the 30th of May, we had a rest, a full day's rest. I was in need of it because I'd done quite a long spell by this time with being out in the west and the east. So we had a full day's rest on the 30th, and then we went out again on the west side of the box on the 31st, 8 o'clock.
What was the purpose of this?
Well, this was to harass the enemy in front of the box rather than those behind.
Can I just come in quickly at this point? When you were doing these raids and columns, were you... did you get to know what you were intending to do? Were you briefed in any way?
Well, we're still on almost the same as we're doing with the Jock column. We're going out, harassing the enemy, getting prisoners for information, seeing what was happening on the front, see what they were, where they were digging in, why they were digging in. And one very interesting episode in this situation was that during the day the Italians were laying, the Italians had moved now to within about 2,000 yards of our front post. And during the day the Italians were laying mines, we were going out at nines with the REs and three tonners and picking the mines up and bringing them back. Now, one thing about this, and I don't think we had a lot of discussion about it, I don't think we ever came to a conclusion, a lot of the mines were French. And we wondered why. Were they getting them from North Africa, from Tunisia, or were they coming from the continent? But a lot of the mines that we were lifting, that the Italians were laying, proved to be French. There was a lot of discussion about it, but I don't think we ever came to any conclusion as to why they were French. There was another thing about going west, and I think we felt this all the time, rather than going out east of the box. When we went west, we were fighting towards home. And there was a feeling of this. I can't really explain. It was the daftest thing. It was impossible to get home. Even if we did fight. Well, we did fight all the way eventually. Well, I mean, it was a daft thought, but it was just this thing. If we went west, we were fighting towards home. And that was a great thing to look forward to. Anyway, we went out again to Strickland's course, this time in front of the 8th Battalion, and Captain Cole and his OP, the Gunner OP, Gunner Observation position, officer, observation person. I should maybe explain one or two of these bits as we go through. They went out to B12, where there was already an 8th Battalion patrol standing, and the Gunner OP did a marvellous job. He had some wonderful shoot-ups. But now...
B12, a map reference.
That's a map reference. Actually, it was a little hummock with a on the desert with some tanks on it. 40-gallon drums on it. And it was this one, particular one, was classed as B12. There was about 18 of them altogether, I believe. And B12 was just past Strickland's post, which we looked after. And then the 8th Battalion had this other one on B12. And the Gunner OP went out and stayed with the 8th Battalion for a while. And he had a good shoot-up. Now, Apple Column, of course, I did say had lost its artillery. They'd gone down to try and support the 150 Brigade. So Apple Column now had lost most of its artillery. It still had its anti-tank guns, but the bulk of its artillery had gone. But with the lines being so close, they could use heavier artillery pieces out of the box to do quite a lot of its destruction. The only snag was that the 25 pounder, to be any good against the tank, it had to be over what we called open sights, which was that the barrel was more or less horizontal with the ground, so it didn't do its shoot up in the air and then fall. It was actually shot directly at the tank. and then they were destructive, almost as good as the 88. But the disadvantage with the 25 pounder was that it wasn't traversable. It was sort of manually traversed, apart from a certain amount of deflection. To get a full circle on it, you had to manually move it round on a track. The 88 millimetre of the Germans, it could stick on its position, and it had a 360 degree arc. So even if you got behind the 88 with a tank, you were still vulnerable, because it could shoot direct. I mean, the 88 was the same thing. If it was shooting over the top of anybody, it didn't have the effect against the tank that it had when it was shooting directly. I mean, it's just a matter of all the power going directly against the tank, and instead of going up in the air and coming down and exploding when it lands on the ground. Anyway, to use solid shot, which they did use quite a lot with, against the tanks, that wouldn't have been any good. I mean, the idea was of a 25 pound is really to throw it in the air and let it come down, it hits the ground and the shell explodes, and then does the damage. So we'd lost the 25 pounds that usually went with us. So in effect, we'd lost quite a lot of our tank, anti-tank supply. And we were now, the Italians, and I think probably reinforced by Germans, they were getting a bit naughty with us now. They were trying to keep the lines closer together, because they had a lot of traffic running down behind them. I mean, where they had been before was now one of the main supply routes for the German troops, which were around the bottom of the box. And they were protecting their supply routes much more now. In fact, on one occasion, they came over with 17 armoured cars and about 12 support, assault guns, self-propelled guns, and just walked over the top of the ridge. And they had a good shoot at us then, which wasn't very thrilling. However, we kept on doing this, and we were going out and taking prisoners, and at night we were going out again and pinching the mines that they were laying through the day. On one occasion, we B-12 was actually cut off completely. They were surrounded. And the carriers and two of the armoured cars from the South Africans went out, and they had a good shoot up. Fortunately, the gunner OP was there, so he was still able to lob some stuff over, but he didn't have his direct anti-tank shot. So there was quite a big do about that one, and Cole had a terrific time again. He had a marvellous shoot up, a marvellous write up, and Kirby with his Walters. They both went out and they did some real damage. And they got this box clear, this outpost back into the lines. And grateful the 8th Battalion were, because they were almost lost. A platoon it was on this. Well, most of the outposts were platoon strong.
Was your responsibility still the same on the Collins?
Yes, try and get as many vehicles as possible back. The thing really was that, the instruction was, if I couldn't repair it within 30 minutes, I fired it. I don't remember firing any. I don't remember losing any. There's one or two occasions, except if they'd hit a mine or something like that. I mean, if it carried a mine, there's no way you could repair that. And all you can do in that case is go out and get as much off as you can. And if it's possible to bring it back, we'll bring it back. But in most cases, to bring the carrier back, to bring it back reasonably, you need loaders. We did drag them back with 3 tonners, just like we dragged the tank in some time ago. We did drag them back. But a lot of cases, there was more danger to bringing them back than there was to going out for them. Because once a vehicle gets stuck, it is a landmark. And the enemy, or even ourselves, we would train what we call fixed lines on them. I think I did explain fixed lines before. Once you've got a landmark out in the desert, then you use it. Just like we had this B-12, which is a series of oil drums. A carrier in the middle of the desert was a great landmark, because then you can relate to it and you can position vehicles in relation to that, whereas it's difficult to relate vehicles to a hump in the desert, because you can barely see the hump. It's so small you can barely see it. But why you've got a vehicle stuck, so naturally the great thing was, if possible, was to get them back, which we often did. But we didn't lose many vehicles at all, even in this stage. there was lots of vehicles that out in the desert, but they had been there for some considerable time. And I think there's probably more German and Italian stuff than there was of ours. But this was the orders, that 30 minutes and fire it and get shot of it. But you didn't fire it unless you really got to, because once you made a fire, everybody knew you were there. And you couldn't always put a delayed charge in. If you could put a delayed charge and then get away out of it and then set it on fire, that was all right. But you didn't fire if you weren't very, let's say you weren't popular, if you fired anything and the troops were still around you. So we had quite a good deal there, and this went on for another fortnight. We were out in the front until eventually the Germans got rather sick of us, and they sent a strong force of about, I think there were 6 tanks and 12 armoured cars and the support guns just behind them. They had a great idea. I don't know whether I didn't mention this before or not, but they had a great idea of coming out with their tanks and starting a battle and then withdrawing behind their guns, which left our vehicles open. During all this period, mind, we still never had a tank out on the west side, which, again, it's something we don't know. Probably there was a reason, but we never had a tank of our own out on the west side. If we had a tank at all, it was an enemy tank that had been captured and reused. And we did this for another 14 days, or thereabouts. I think it was about the 14th when... I think we went back on the 12th after this smuggle with the tanks and the armoured cars. And we went back in the box, and Freddie Cole was sent out again to do something stupid, and he got a rightful beat up. But I didn't go with him on that trip. It was something that was arranged by the 8th Battalion, Colonel Jackson. He'd been with the 6th as second commander, then he got the 8th Battalion as CO. In fact, he had been a Green Howard. And he arranged something, and he sent Cole out again with his carriers, and they got shot very badly. I think they lost about 3 carriers on that trip, but I was with them on that one. Then on the 4th, I think, I don't know what it was, Saturday the 13th or Sunday the 14th, but one of these days, we got back in and were told that, we weren't told, but we were told to pack our vehicles with 3 days' rations, as much ammunition as we needed, petrol, as much as reasonably carrying, rations, water, anything that we were told we were going on a 3-day trip.
You weren't told where, why?
Not at this stage, no.
So you didn't know that in effect you'd be trying to break out?
Well, we suspected we'd break out, but not to break out to depart. I mean, we still felt secure in our box. It's just one of these things. I mean, once you're in the box, you felt as though you were in the box and you were secure in the box. But we're told there was something on. And we had to prepare for this with 3 days rations, 3 days petrol, and any stores that we wanted. And I was given a 3-tonner for this trip. Normally, I had a 1,500 weight. And I was given a 3-tonner. And George and I were loading up. And frankly, we thought we'd going out with Apple Colm again.
What were you loading up with?
With as many spares as I thought necessary for the. Not much more than we took before, really. I mean, we went off for 7 days, but then we'd get a supply of rations about halfway. So basically, it was the same sort of thing as we would normally do if we're going out with a jock column. And we loaded this 3-tonner, much the same way, plenty of rations, plenty of water, and my ground, and my sheets. I always carried my sheets. And we thought we were going back with the apple column to do a... In fact, we thought we were going to reinforce Apple Colm to do a real good shoot-up and possibly break through the enemy supply lines. At this stage, we had no idea how badly the armoured battle had gone. For all I did say, it looked badly when we were out on that side, I was watching with Bill Handel. But we just thought we were going to do what we'd been prepared to do all the time. We'd been in the box for 5 months. We'd spent in the box expecting to do this attack frontal. We never expected sort of to break out and retreat that way.
perhaps retreat isn't the word to use, but that's basically what it was.
Were you going on your own? Did you have other men in your truck?
George Adams was going with me in this case. And it wasn't until lunchtime, I suppose, that I was called into the MTO and he told us we were all going. I mean, this was completely out of the blue. I never expected this at all, that we were all going to leave the box. I thought I was going out as usual with the column and we were going to do possibly do a bridgehead. Quite honestly, I thought we might do a bridgehead and let maybe somebody else break out, the tanks break out, which was generally done. You see, if you made a bridgehead and then the tanks would go through you and they'd get out the backside and that would shoot over the backside. We didn't know we had any tanks.